Okay, we're back. You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds Into Other Realms, and I'm Anthony Kay. We're talking to Frank Fraschino right now about the Flatwoods Monster. Go ahead, Sam.
This is, you know, we think of Flatwood Monster, we think of Frank Fraschino. He's done the research. Tell us about this and put people straight as far as what it was and what it was not.
Okay, what I did, Sam, is what I started to talk about earlier, is the Flatwoods Monster incident happened on September 12, 1952. It was about 8 o'clock at night. And there was a damaged oval-shaped UFO that flew over West Virginia. And this craft passed over a small little school playground, the Flatwoods Elementary School. And it made a 45-degree angle turn, passed over the kids, over the school, and it went and it landed up on the back portion of what is called the Bailey Fisher Farm. And this group of kids went up onto the farm with Mrs. Kathleen May, who just passed away recently, and Gene Lemon, who was a 17-year-old cousin. So what we have is a bunch of kids, all different ages, 6, 10 years old, 11, 13, 13, 14, Lemon, the adult, the West Virginia National Guardsman. He was 18 and Mrs. May was 32. All these people go up onto this farm and they're going to look for something that touched down on the back of the property. Now, this thing that was seen, Sam, I interviewed some adult witnesses, and this thing was about the size of a two-car garage, okay, end-to-end. Not a two-car garage side-to-side, end-to-end. And it was approximately over 30 feet by about 18 feet high. It looked almost like a big eggplant or an egg. It had a smaller radius in the front with a larger radius on the other side. This thing was seen in flames as it passed over to Flatwood School. It dropped down on the top portion of the Bailey Fisher Farm. This group of people are going up there to see this. And it's about dusk. This was about 7:30. And as the group is moving up towards the area, this thing had actually moved at the high point of the mountain and situated itself and relocated this big craft in the gully of a farm out behind some pear trees of this small orchard. And the group is moving across this big wide open field, which is actually the first portion of the farm. And as they're moving up in that direction, some of them saw something flare way up on the back portion of the farm. This was the UFO. What had happened in the meantime, the occupant, which is called the Flatwoods Monster, actually had departed the craft, went across a second field, and moved up behind this gigantic tree. Now, if you go onto my website, you can see a lot of the pictures that were actually shot on location of this tree. It was an oak tree. It was well over 100 feet tall. Right now, it's just a little shell, and it's deteriorating. What this Flatwoods Monster did is moved up behind this tree, and it hovered there, and it was in hiding. The Flatwoods Monster wasn't a flesh and blood monster like had been portrayed with the big bulging eyeballs. It had this hood over its head with a long flowing cloak that looked like a dress. It was some type of a small shuttle machine. It was made out of some type of a metallic hard shell. It was actually aluminum in color. And this was like a miniature pod with a being inside of it. This is the conclusion I have come to by working with the witnesses. So this small craft, shuttlecraft, moves across, and it's situated behind a tree. The craft is hot, and it's burning. It's on fire. It's setting way back out in the distance. The kids and Mrs. May and Gene Lemon, they're walking up. They come to their first gate that borders the farm. It's a big steel gate. It's a farm gate. They open it up, they pass through it, and they wire it closed. They walk up the path. Okay, now it's a pretty rough path, about 8 feet wide, dirt, rocks, overgrown. And back in that time, the farm was very overgrown. Now it looks like a dude ranch. It's a beautiful ranch with fences and white and red fences with beautiful barns. Back then, it was pretty dumpy looking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't taken care of as well. And this whole group is moving up this path, Sam, and the path starts to incline. Okay? They're going to look way out in the back for what had touched down. Some of the young kids thought it was a meteor. The older kids said it was something else. It more looked more like a UFO. They didn't know. There was mixed feelings with the kids, all different opinions. But regardless, they were pushing and they wanted to see what the hell was up on that back hill. They hadn't seen it relocate and go down into the gully of the farm. So it's sitting down inside this gully pasture. A couple of the kids had seen something out in a different distance, but weren't sure what it was. They're looking way out there on the top of the mountain. This thing started pulsing and flashing out in the distance. Mrs. May saw a red flare type, red purplish flare, she told me in her interviews, come from the back portion of the farm. They're pushing up, and now it's starting to get dark, Sam. As they're walking up this incline of this rocky dirt path, off to the left-hand side, they hear some noises coming, and it sounded, Kathleen May told me, it sounded like kind of like a drum beat, a low rhythm beating. And she told me it sounded like something hit against stretched canvas, kind of like a bass drum. And this whole area, Sam, where they're walking up, starts to be engulfed with this sulfur-type smell. And they start coughing and gagging, and the whole thing turns into a mess. The kids are they're teary-eyed. They're having trouble breathing. They're breathing all this crap in. They're pushing forward. They thought it was something from what landed up on the back. They really weren't sure. What happens is there's a swagging in this path, and it bends around to the left. There's another fence there, and this is a wooden fence where they had put slats from post to post. This is where they would keep the animals backed in there. And there's a fence along the right-hand side. To their left-hand side is where the woods are. They have to climb over this wooden fence. At this point, it starts getting a little thicker with this sulfur-type fog rolling in. They're moving along, and Mrs. May and Lemon, the two oldest of the group, and Neil Munley, he was 14 years old, Eddie May, who was one of Mrs. May's boys, the older boy, he was 13, and we had Ronnie Shaver. He was one of the other kids. And they're all up over this area past this wooden fence, and they're pushing forward. They wanted to see what was up there. It started to become even thicker. This like it was like a smoke, like a fog, and it's rolling down the area. Back at the end of the path, we have Freddie May, the other son, Teddy Neal, and Tommy Heyer. He was a six-year-old kid. He was like the baby of the group. These kids were at the tail end of this wagon train. When the rest of the group started moving up beyond this wooden gate, this is where, up to their left, about 4 feet back, they heard these noises. And this was the source of where this gas was coming from, this sulfur-type gas. It's rolling and bellowing out from behind this tree. It's kind of like an exhaust.
So they're seeing it. They're seeing and hearing the fog or the smelly vapor coming.
It's rolling down the hill. It's being forced out. Okay. What it actually was this metal craft, which was called the Flatwoods Monster. It was like a probe. Mm-hmm. This thing was hovering, and the sulfur smell was the exhaust coming up, and it's rolling down the hill. They don't see this thing, Sam, because it's up 4 feet off the path behind this gigantic oak tree. They don't see it. They're coming up on it, looking up to their left. They're still looking straight ahead, trying to figure out where's that goddamn thing that was up in the distance. Yeah. And they're looking for it up there. They're walking into this fog. Now, Mrs. May had a flashlight, and so did Gene Lemon. So they're leading the pack with this flashlight. They turn the flashlights on because Gene Lemon saw something up to his left. Mrs. May is walking just ahead of him, and they flashed their flashlights up. There was still a little bit of light along the path where they could see. They didn't have their lights on at that point. And like the witnesses I work with said, you keep your batteries for the way on the trip back home because spare second of light is precious, especially when you're walking up into those mountains. So they really didn't need the flashlights too much at that point, Sam, because it was still a little bit of light. Save it for the trip home when you're going to need it.
Right.
But off to the left-hand side of the woods, Sam, is where the woods were. So it was a little bit darker in there, and there was some shadows, so it was a little harder to see. Well, what they did is they put their beams on. Mrs. May and Gene Lemon, they saw something about 12 feet up in the air. And Gene Lemon first thought it was a possum up in a tree because there were, like, low, dim lights. He thought they were the owl, animal, like a possum. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what it was. They redirected the beams and hit this thing, and that's when they almost had a heart attack. They thought it was an animal perched up on a limb 12 feet in the air. They were actually eyes from this metallic spacesuit. Now, if you go online on my website, you could see some of my illustrations. I work with several little witnesses, and being an illustrator trained, I was able to sit down and do police-style renderings with the witnesses. And what I did, Sam, is I did quick thumbnail sketches with them, then I did comprehensive sketches, then I sat there with the witnesses, and years and years I was sending pictures back and forth, and we were working on stuff. When I went to West Virginia, I would meet with the witnesses and sit down there for hours and draw these pictures. I would hand them the pencil, they would draw sketches, but since they couldn't draw too well, I would kind of finish it up and clean it up, and they'd say, no, it looked more like this than that, and this and that and the other. So anyways, I got these working drawings, and I did full-blown illustrations of what this thing looked like, and it was just under 12 feet tall, and it had this ace of spades shape, that's a tongue twister, over the portion of its head, and it peaked. Inside this area was a round head. Now, the original drawings were completely wrong. What this inside red face was actually an inner helmet, Sam. And it had two porthole openings. They were not eyeballs. The witnesses were all over me saying they were not eyeballs. They were portholes, like of a helmet. Mm-hmm. So the original sketch has this monster with a red head with these scary bulging eyes and all of that junk that went along with it, and it was hyped up as a big monster. Well, it wasn't. The Ace of Spades shape was actually an outer helmet. The front of it, the facade, I was told that it actually was some type of a plate glass window. It was like a protective barrier.
So was on the front of it, and the inside were the two portals.
Right. There was a round helmet. How this whole thing, when I was sitting down with Freddie May, I said, Freddie, I says, this is kind of what you're describing. And he brought the idea up, and we were going back and forth. It's actually like looking in the cockpit of a fighter jet of one of our pilot's sitting there with a helmet on.
Gotcha.
You're looking inside, except this thing was a small mobile. It had an outer helmet and an inner helmet. The inner helmet was round. The outer helmet was the protective portion of it.
Now, this thing moved across. They seen it. It was in the air about 12 feet high. Multiple witnesses seen it. And yet, who comes back saying it was a owl? Who on earth said it was an owl? No witness said that, did they?
No, none of the witnesses did. And what's great about this whole thing, Sam, is I worked very close with Kathleen May for years. And this is what I want people to realize. This was not a single sit-down interview, Sam. I interviewed the witnesses. The primary ones I worked with were Kathleen and Freddie. I talked with them for hours, years, working with them. And Freddie May was back at the gate. So what is cool about this, he was at that wooden fence gate. Mm-hmm. He saw the whole thing unfold in front of him with his mom, Lemon Nunley, his brother, and Ronnie Shaver. He saw the thing come out in front of them. Mrs. May, who I interviewed and did sketches with her and got her description, she saw it up close.
I see.
She said she saw it the length of a small car. So this thing came within about 12 feet approximately of her. So she got a good close-up of it. This thing came right and moved in front of her. And Lemon was next to her. It shocked the hell out of him. He fell over backwards. He just got rubbery, like Kathleen told me, and he just fell over. And this thing moved right in front of him. And it inevitably went back into the field, and it went back on board its craft. And so when I was working with them, and especially doing my illustrations, Sam, it was so great because Mrs. May gave me the details of it up close. Freddie's explaining what happened, the overall picture
right.
of it. So
he's back, he could see it, he could see the reaction from the people, he's a little further back. Mrs. May's much closer, she gets more detail, but he's getting more detail of the interaction, the distance from each other. And
exactly, and yeah. That was what I based my descriptions on. Now, one of the biggest misconceptions of this whole thing, it was called the Green Monster. It was actually metallic. It was like an aluminum color. It was shiny. What had happened is when this thing lit up, Mrs. May said it lit up from the inside and it forced the beams out. This thing definitely reacted. It was in hiding, Sam. When the beams of the flashlight hit it, this thing glowed from the inside, lit up. The flashlights hit it. This part of the summer, in Indian summer, the leaves had not changed, so everything was still green in the area, the bushes, the shrubbery,
right.
the leaves. So it reflected green up against it.
Ah,
that's where you get the myth of
monster.
The green monster. But actually, the witnesses had told me, and it was documented way back then by the original researchers, Sanderson and Ivan T. Sanderson and Gray Barker, that this thing was like an aluminum silver color. It was the reflection that gave the misconception.
Did the object leave then? Did the craft leave, or was it damaged where it couldn't leave?
It was on the ground for a little time, Sam. It was definitely damaged.
Mm-hmm. So they had evidently something or someone repaired it. So they could able to get this thing
right. It cooled down. It did whatever had to be done, and it took off a little bit while later. It was on the ground for close to half an hour before it was even seen, but it was seen taking off later on. And I spoke to different witnesses, and I got newspaper accounts from the little weekly newspapers up there.
Yes,
of people who had actually seen it moving away, Sam.
Hmm. And the description was pretty much the same.
Yeah, with the same thing.
Type shape or
right, and
shape.
It moved through that portion of Braxton County, and it landed about 17 miles away. So what I did, Sam, is I got more maps of West Virginia than you could shake a stick at. I have the topographical maps and the stuff that the hunters used, and I would go into the into Sutton, into the capital, the county seat of Braxton County, and when everybody's hunting and getting all their maps for hunting, I was going in and I'm getting all my maps, except I'm using mine to track the UFO sighting. So what I did is I plotted these points, similar to what I did on that master map with 102 locations. I did the same thing of Braxton County.
And again, Frank Pershino, Shoot Them Down, the Flatwoods Monster. That was a great interview. Thank you, Frank. We're going to be back with a UFO witness, and she's going to tell us exactly what she saw. That and so much more coming up on Beyond the Thresholds, Into Other Realms on ThresholdsRadio.com.
Beyond the Thresholds, Into Other Realms on ThresholdsRadio.com.
Okay, we're back with Beyond the Thresholds, Into Other Realms, and we have a witness on the phone, a UFO witness, codenamed Anne, because, you know, we don't want to tell her real name, and she doesn't want to tell her real name. But, Anne, why don't you tell our audience your story? When was this, 2000?
I believe it was March 10th of 2000, on a Friday night, about 9:10. It was a clear, cold night. There was snow on the ground. And, of course, there's no leaves on the trees at that time. And we were coming out of a Cracker Barrel restaurant south of I-94 on 9th Street near Kalamazoo in Michigan.
And you're going out of the you're going out onto 9th Street over the expressway.
Yes. And then we stopped at a traffic light that's just on the other side, but still up in the air compared to the expressway and the rest of 9th Street. While we were sitting there and I was talking, I stopped talking because I could see my husband wasn't listening to me. He was looking at this object in the sky that we had both been able to see for several minutes. And it was in the, it was north, in the northwest. We were heading north, so it was just to the left of us. And it was very low to the ground, just above the treetop, but yet it looked very large, and it was had at least two very bright white lights on it. And we became very concerned when we were talking about it right then that it was nowhere near the airport, but it seemed like a landing was inevitable. I've never seen an aircraft that low, especially something that big, an airliner, that was at that altitude without landing.
Again, the airport is southeast of there, some miles. So, at the altitude that you're seeing it, it just doesn't make sense. It's just too low.
Right. We didn't see how it could possibly make it to the airport at that altitude, being that the airport was actually several miles to the east, continuing down 94, I-94, and to the south of it, So, yes, we became quite concerned, and as we were driving home, it seemed to hang in the sky, and we became concerned that it was, we started joking that it was going to land in Oshtemo. Because it seemed, we thought it at first, we kept trying to make it like it was heading east, but it just was really slow. It was confusing us.
And we drove up. Would be just to the east of where it was.
Okay, I always ask this with our UFO witnesses. I'm kind of curious. Did you have any missing time at all?
I'm not sure. I'm not absolutely sure on that one. I don't think so, but if it was, it probably would have been maybe 10 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
Nothing more.
And so you came across the bridge, and then you took a left, was that?
Yes, we went about halfway between the highway that we just crossed and Oshtemo, which was about a mile or so, and turned. I thought we were going to keep going north into Oshtemo and swing around behind it so that we wouldn't have to deal with it at all, but suddenly my husband got the bright idea to turn left and head down this road and avenue that runs east and west. And when I questioned him about it, he was thinking that we could outrun it and be on the other side of it looking back and look at it more and see if we could determine more from the other side. But to me, it didn't seem like it was... It didn't seem like it was a very safe plan, because it seemed like we were on a more or less a collision course or an intersection course with this craft.
That had to startle you.
It was very frightening.
Approximately how long was this sighting?
I'm going to say about 10 minutes.
Okay. So you're driving westbound. What was it then that you did, and approximately how soon after was that, after you turned off, that you decided to do what you're about to say you did?
Well, the road is about 2 miles long. My husband was going about 60, so that was probably about 2 minutes on that stretch.
Okay.
And the other stretch and the rest of it was probably 3 or 4 minutes sitting at the bridge and driving to that point.
And so we're looking at an interval of 5 to 6 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, and then you had parked the truck, as I recall?
We got down to the end of that road, which teed into 6th Street, and for some reason my husband just stopped the truck right in the lane and left it running and the lights on and everything, and we just both got out. We didn't really talk about it. We just both did it. And we both went to the back of the truck, and my husband put his foot up on the bumper, and I put my foot on the other side on the tire. And we were both watching as this, what we thought was a jetliner, was approaching us. We could see it through the tree branches. In fact, after we turned off 9th Street onto N Avenue, I was watching it the whole time, and it seemed to be just kind of hanging in the sky. We expected it to just fly over us at jet speed at some point, but it didn't. It was just hanging there, and it seemed like it was really going to intersect with where we were. It seemed to be moving much slower than it should be, but we could actually see it through the tree branches all the way down the road as we were making that 2 mile run.
And what were you hearing at this point?
Was not hearing anything.
Were you expecting to?
No, not from inside the truck. When we got out, when we stopped and got out and we were looking up, I wasn't really thinking about sounds. We were thinking about what details we could glean to tell the authorities, such as what airline it was, maybe some numbers. Maybe we could see the landing gear was down or there was an engine on fire or something like that. We were trying to be really helpful. And because it was so low to the ground and it was just above the treetops, we knew we were going to be able to see quite a lot of detail. So we were just standing there waiting. And it was really odd because, having thought driving all the way down there that it'd be crossing our path at any time, we actually ended up making it all the way down there before it crossed our path. And now it was kind of behind the truck.
It was going slow, very slow pace, much slower than anything you would anticipate.
Oh, yes.
Now, here you are outside. And by any chance, when you came out, did you make any calls to anybody in particular? Did you have a cell phone with you?
No. My husband carried a cell phone at the time, but he left it in the truck. We didn't have a camera with us either, which I wish we would have. But so we were standing there waiting a few moments while it closed in on us. And then it started to... we could see the lights. The lights were kind of shining on us and things. But we couldn't really see at that point because the lights were just so glaring. So both of us put our arms up to shield the light from our eyes. And we could now see like one headlight that we could just put our arms up and block it. And suddenly the rest of the craft, or at least at this point the front of it, became visible.
And what were you seeing at that point?
As it flew over. What we saw was a excruciatingly perfect and pointed, very sharply pointed, triangular tip of a craft. And when we saw that, we both dropped our arms and looked at each other and almost in unison said, "What the hell is that?" with a very surprised look on our faces. And since we realized neither one of us knew, we went back to watching. And the tip proceeded to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it became this really huge, what I call and what I've seen termed as large black triangle craft.
Now, again, the illuminations, where were they coming from?
Well, this craft had three really huge globe or half globe shaped bright white lights that were stuck on the bottom near each corner, not at the corner, but recessed in from the corner. And then in the middle, we saw as it crossed over us, there was also a light, but it was a red light. And we could see that there was a hole that this red light was up inside of, recessed up inside of, and it was that whole part was very pretty large, large enough to me that I thought small craft could come and go out of it.
Now, when you're saying large, comparatively to, say, for instance, a conventional aircraft at that level, was it larger? Was it equal to? Or how would you
it
say?
As it was flying overhead, in my mind, I was taking 747s and kind of placing them within the shape of it. And I came up with anywhere from, I would say, 5 or 6 747s would fit inside of the shape of it.
You're talking length, full width to width, wingspan to wingspan.
Yes.
So we're talking a very big object.
I have read where they have said to people, how far was it if you take a dime or a quarter and you hold it at arm's length, would
yes.
it cover the object? The only thing that I would have been able to cover this object with, and not even at arm's length, but at regular length, would have been an umbrella. If I would have had an umbrella that was on my shoulder, then I would not have seen it.
Okay.
But that's pretty big.
It was so huge. Yeah, it was really huge.
And it was
very
obviously
scary.
Much higher than you had anticipated also.
How's that? What do you
mean? It was higher than you anticipated also.
Higher up in the air, you mean?
Yes.
No.
Okay. How high do you feel it was up in the air?
Well,
it'd be hard to tell unless you triangulate, because
but it turns out that I'm in a profession where I'm called upon to measure things with instruments, such as trees and things like that, and I've gotten pretty good over the years at eyeballing it, and I know that those particular trees, and I went back and checked later, those trees that it was coming over were about 75 feet tall.
Wow.
And I think the way that it looked at the time, if you took those trees and put them on top of each other, you could then reach the craft.
So this definitely was not a stealth bomber, huh?
No.
Oh,
no God. Way. Not even close.
That's what they say a lot of this triangular sightings are. They try to say it's stealth. Or
this was a perfect triangle. And the bottom of it looked really flat, except for a little bit of contour right around the hole that had the red light inside of it.
And did you feel,
reminded me of a diving hole from a boat? I'm sorry.
Did you feel scared or some fear?
I felt absolutely terrified. In fact, had my husband not been there, I would have been in my car and out of there. And I don't even know if I would have stopped and gotten in my car. I just would have gotten out of there.
Now, the detail. Did you see any? Any obvious panels or
no.
anything? How did it appear to be?
I did not see anything that was like rivets or seams. And I should have been able to see that easily from the distance that we were looking. I didn't see any, like, little handles or any numbers or letters or logos or symbols, nothing like that.
And what color was this? Or was it a color?
It was probably a dark gray. It appeared to us to be black because it blotted out the sky. And even though there was no moon, it was a clear night, and we were looking at it in the glare of the city lights of Kalamazoo. So it was, I mean, we could see perfectly the silhouette, and then the lights themselves that shone down to the ground, reflecting up off the snow, and lit up the bottom of the craft, so we could see every detail of the craft. And it was so close, if I would have had a baseball, I could have thrown it and hit the bottom of it.
Those lights you were talking about, how far were they from the actual edge of
the ship? I don't
know.
There was space around it. They, you know, they were towards the corners, but they just weren't, like, on the tips of the corners.
Okay, so look at the, and you're looking at the illuminations, which appear to be like a ping pong ball cut in half, correct? And
yes.
Stuck on top
yep.
of there.
Yep.
And it's self-illuminated. Is it transparent or is it more opaque?
Are you talking about the light?
Yes. Is it more like a white light bulb or a transparent bulb?
It was more opaque.
Okay.
It
now,
was
with that size, solid. Like mm-hmm. that, the illumination from the tip or from the edge, the dimension of that, how many of those distance, the width of that, would that be to the location of the edge of one of those illuminations?
From the tip, you're saying?
Yes, let's say...
I would say maybe two.
Okay, so it's two distance from the edge. Now,
yeah.
Are you saying the edge is sharp,
the
pointed?
Edge is sharply pointed. And that was one of the scariest things about it that we saw, and one of the things that tipped us off right away, that this was nothing that we'd ever seen before.
Now, did it appear tip first? Did it come off at an angle? How did it progress overhead?
Well, it was flying parallel to the ground, so we never saw what the front of it looked like, only the front of the bottom of it, if you understand.
Yes, just the bottom.
And then we could also see, for a while, until it was totally over us, we could see the side that was towards us, which was just a straight-up side, and just plain and dark. And then after it passed us, we could see the back panel. So out of presumably, you know, we saw everything except for the other side and the top.
Okay, so the back, what variation, if any, is there?
Well, the back was completely different than the bottom, and it's completely different than the side. The closest thing that I could explain that the whole thing looked like proportionally and everything would be a triangular domino.
A triangular domino.
Yes.
Okay.
It was about that thickness relative to its size, and then it was like a domino, except it was triangular. And then as far as the back panel itself, it reminded me a lot of a, this is going to sound funny, but a 65 Thunderbird taillight lens, except it wasn't red. The whole entire back panel was filled up with what you might call lights or windows. I took them as lights because it was opaque, and they were pretty. It was pretty bright, and it was divided up into squares. It looked like a set of double hung windows all across the back.
Hmm.
Or the other thing that I think of as an ice cube tray turned on its side.
There you go. Have you, we were talking earlier about the sighting down in Millstatt, Dubot, St. Louis, 2000, January
yes.
4th and 5th, and you've seen some drawings and some pictures, illustrations.
Yes.
Do you feel that there's an assimilation or there's something similar there to
well,
what you saw?
Yes. When we first saw it, we'd never seen anything like it And I wasn't that familiar with the, at the time, I'd heard about the Belgium triangles, but I hadn't really read up on it or anything. And about 2 weeks after our sighting, I saw a television show on the Discovery Channel, I believe it was, about the Millstatt incident. My husband was sleeping, and I woke him up in the middle of the night and said, look, those people saw what we saw. And I could tell because of the drawings, and I could tell because of the descriptions that they told as far as the speed of it, which was quite slow. I'd say definitely, you know, 20 miles an hour or slower, maybe even walking speed. And some of them had seen it going very slow, and some of them had seen it going very fast, too. But there were different pictures from that incident, and the artists, I like to call them artist misconceptions, were all over the place, but some of the details were correct, because they did show, there was one that showed what the back panel looked like as a series of white boxes, so that was somewhat similar. But in my professions through the years, it's been very important to me to have very good attention to detail, so I'm very, very clear about what I saw. And as soon as we got home, I drew a picture of it, and I checked with my husband to make sure that we both agreed on where everything was located.
Great. And I don't recall, did I ever receive a copy of that or emailed to me?
No.
Okay.
No, I've described it to you, but I have not sent you a picture. I can do that, though.
Well, one of these days, if you don't mind, I would love to get
sure.
that. The other, you know, just to summarize it, so on March 10th, 2000, both you and your husband were driving in Michigan, seeing what would be referred to as a large black triangle, and you could say with a degree of assurance that this object was obviously one of these football size type objects.
Football field size, yes.
And it moved very slow, and you heard absolutely no sound during this period of time.
Actually, we did hear a sound as okay. it went overhead.
Oh, okay. And what was that?
While we were standing there, I was thinking to myself as it was dawning on me what we were seeing was something we shouldn't be seeing and that it was a UFO. I remembered hearing that a lot of people said there was no sound. So I decided to listen very closely and see if I could hear anything. And I did, and I pointed it out to my husband, who might not have even noticed it had I not pointed it out. But it was, you know, it was, there were no cars around in the area, so it was very, very quiet. And the sound that we heard was sort of a high-pitched whirring sound that reminded me, I tried to instantly compare it to something so that I would feel comfortable and describe it to somebody later. It reminded me of a vacuum cleaner, or the other sound that I was thinking of was a swimming pool pump sound. It was quiet, it was muffled, and I could see why people didn't always hear it, especially if there's any other noises around, but we definitely heard it.
Amazing. Any other odd things take place during or in or around that period of time?
Well, one of the things that happened was while I was standing there, I felt something kind of funny with my body, so I looked down to see what it was, and it was my waist twisting with my legs trying to run off with me.
Wow.
And so it was everything I could do just to stay there and keep watching, because my every instinct was telling me to get out of Dodge fast.
Was there any difference in time, anything that...
We got home about, it seemed like we got home, as I recall, we got home about 9:30, and I thought we had left about 9:10, and it really, you know, was a less than 10-minute drive to the restaurant. Maybe if we hit traffic lights, it'd be 10 minutes, but I thought it was kind of strange that it took us that long to get home, but I may have been a little off on the time that we left, so we didn't think there was any lost time or missing time. In that incident.
Any other unusual
things? But I
know
when we got in the truck after it passed over us and we pulled up to the road to turn and continue on to our home at the time, I said, you know, we could turn left and continue following this until it hits the highway and probably keep up with it. And my husband said, yes, I know. And then he turned right instead, and said, we sped home. And I was so grateful that he didn't follow it. I can't even tell you. But a couple of things about what we noticed. The outside of the ship had a dull kind of sheen to it, sort of a bluish, almost a bluish and whitish sort of sheen, and that sort of sparkled, or, you know, sort of a dull sheen. And and I noticed kind of like cross, like almost fibers or cross, crosshairs. I can't really explain it. Let's see. Kind of like stainless steel, only it was went both directions.
Okay.
And I could see that against the sheen as it was on the bottom of the ship, from the light from the bottom of the ship.
Was there any other planes in the sky during this period of time?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. And also the red light, which was up inside the ship more, and I can see why a lot of people don't even often see that light, because at different angles it wouldn't even be visible, and it's also fainter than the white light. But around that opening was a series of little tiny lights.
What color were those?
Those were white, and then there was like a long sort of bar, like a slit light, I guess you might call it, on either side of that. And those were white also. And those were minute details that you wouldn't see unless you were really close.
Okay,
and
I won't describe it. Was that the right or left of it? Or in other words, if you're looking up smack dab at the middle of the round red lights, there's also white lights on the inside or on the outside?
No, these are... The red light is recessed up inside of a kind of a porthole sort of thing.
Okay.
And then around that hole is where these little lights are located. And I don't want to describe the exact pattern because it's something I want to keep.
Yeah, that's fine. I
for now.
Prefer, yeah.
And for discussion with other authorities.
Right. That's very good. That's what we generally do. Again, Anne, I want to thank you very much for your time and for your interview. And keep your eyes to the skies, my friend.
This is Sam Maranto. We're back with Mike Rambacher, who is in the field right now in Pennsylvania. Mike is a paranormal researcher and historian. And Mike, can you give us some detail about what is going on and a little bit of history on the case in general?
First thing, the land has been here long before us, and will be here long after us, and it remembers everything that ever happened on it, so it's due all the respect that it should have. Now, for this particular place, Annie, who has had this gone on in her place here since April. She's lived in the house since 1991 with no problems. So one of my key things that I'm going to have to find is what happened in her life in April of this year to create all the disruption. That's going to be one of the things I have to worry about. The land was priorly coal mined. There were coal mines all through here, and actually the whole project is built on top of a coal mine. There were miners that were never found after collapses. And so what we've looked at is where are the entrances to the old mines? Where do they run? Blueprints. Conceivably, everything is directly underneath this place. There are sinkholes that have developed. There have been water disruptions in the groundwater, which is actually normal for a mine operation or an ex-mine operation. I've dealt with two other cases that had structures that were built on top of old mines, and they have a lot of similarities. what Annie started to experience was pulsating vibrations on her bed. Only at the end of her bed, in one spot. I've used my EMF meters, I've checked everything, it's flatline zero, nothing. Absolutely nothing. She's found areas that extend up maybe 2 or 3 feet, and they go blank. Some of them are 6 feet of a height of an energy shaft, which made it quite interesting. But the thing that really got me was the one thing that has been going on in the corner of her living room. She hears clicking, popping sounds, just like you're sitting there and it's louder than heck. Well, I did some research and found that in the mines, when the miners went in, they had the little metal clickers, like the crickets when we grew up as kids. We had the little crickets that went click, 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 click. Well, those were standard issue for miners, and if they became separated or their lights went out or whatever, they were told to start clicking so somebody could locate them. That was a key thing into where we needed to start to look. And this is just the first time that I have been here with Roger, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to grid the interior of our house. The second trip down, we'll grid the exterior and plant some stones. But hopefully, with the interior work that we're going to do today, we'll go through each room, we'll do, say, a brief prayer in the corner of each room. I'll leave her amethyst, which is Michael the Archangel's stone, and Father Alphonsus Tribal's chrism. And he was an exorcist from St. Bonaventure University for 45 years, and he was also a representative to the papacy on paranormal activity within the church. Hmm. Quite an incredible man that I was able to meet and work under for 5 years. Wow. But, so that's what I'm going to do today. We're going to try to calm our nerves down. We're going to see if this will react, and hopefully things will get better with this. And then my next trip, we will plant the stones around the property. And now, that should grid the property.
The stones, the significance or purpose of the stones, can you fill us in on that?
Yes. There's malachite, carnelian, black onyx, and white, white coral. Each one of them has some chrism on it. The owner of the property digs a hole. We find the location of that with a dowsing rod. Where the dowsing rods work, we only take what the land will give us. So I will go along, and when they bend, we mark the spot. We will then go back, and the landowner will dig a small hole, and she will plant the stone in the hole. And then the whole property from inside to outside will be gridded. At that point, she should be protected from whatever energy it is. I've been doing this for 25 years, and I know it works. So
now, at this stage, you're looking at this more so as a possession?
I would say it's an attachment, not a possession. A possession is really radical and very rare. The attachment is probably to the land right here. But we don't know what stimulated it and made it active. She was here for a long time with nothing, and now she's got everything. So
now,
we have to do some more work.
In April, what transpired? Was there somebody new in the house? Was what happened in April?
Yeah, we have not found that out yet. We do not know. She cannot recall anything out of the normal that happened in April. So we're going to have to do a little bit more digging. And it may not have anything to do with her. It may have something to do with the people that own the land here.
So
we have to do some more digging.
So Annie is renting there, or she is a guest? What is the relationship to the landowner?
Okay. She rents.
And again, she's been there how long?
Since 1991.
Now, in talking to her, you found similarities between other cases?
Yeah, the electromagnetic, I've used a couple of different EMF meters, and I find outside the main electrical box is about 25, 30 feet, which supplies three other trailers. It is reading about 14 or 15 milligauss right next to the meter. So it has a little leakage, but as soon as you move away from it, everything goes to zero. So that is not a contributing problem.
The geology of the land, is the geology of the land subject to a lot of seismic activity?
You know, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Just because of what was here and what still is here, they are told that the mines are still underneath this place. With the sinkholes and everything else that have popped up, there is movement, and that'll have a determining factor in it.
Hi, Mike. My name's Anthony. I'm on the radio show here with you, with Sam. I just had a question.
Sure.
I mean, is there any cold spots or is there a teenager living in the house, you said?
Yeah, I know where you're going with that, and that's a great observation. No kids.
Well, actually, no, I'm not going to take the credit for that. That's actually John that brought that up to me that I was just thinking of. But I
yeah, all you needed was an adolescent, right? And that would have that would help.
Yeah.
But not the case.
In the other homes nearby, how close are the next homes?
Oh. 40 feet.
40 feet. Is there anybody with mental illness?
No mental illness, and there is one lady down from her who has a who's in a wheelchair. But other than that, there should be no. I don't see any abnormalities. I've done some checking, and people.
Could you get Annie to give us a brief detail on some of the things that she's had experienced?
I sure will. I'll hand it over to her.
Thank you so much, Michael.
You betcha. And we'll be more than happy to update you as soon as we're available of the answers to the question.
Great. Hello, Annie. How are you today?
Good.
I heard you've had some very interesting experiences.
A little bit, yeah.
And when did this all start?
It's around April, sometime in April, maybe a little bit before.
And what was it that was so unnerving that you had to pay attention to it?
Well, I just went to bed like usual, brought my stuff back there, and I was laying there ready to fall asleep, and I felt a pulse on my bed. I could actually pinpoint where the strongest point was, and I couldn't believe it. I thought somebody was playing a trick on me.
Did it almost feel like the bed was shaking?
No, it was a pulse. It was a thumping coming from the... It was on my right hip, and it was coming from there.
It was a thumping.
Yes.
And how many times have you experienced this since then?
At first, it was slow, progressively. It got worse and worse that I moved out of the bedroom and went onto the couch. And then I was on the couch for a while, and it didn't do it until about a week later, maybe less than a week, and then it was on the couch. And then from the couch, it went on to, I have a computer set up on my kitchen table, and it went on to the chair. It was pretty weird.
That's kind of creepy.
On a specific side of your body more so than another side?
No, because it would go on the, like, no, it, different places.
And it would be a thumping. Try to describe it to the best of your ability.
It wasn't like a heartbeat pulse. It was like a pulse. It was like, it just went bump, 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 like exactly that. And I could feel it. I tore the couch apart. I tore the bed apart. I looked at the chair. And it was aggravating because it was depriving me of sleep. And I couldn't sleep. I mean...
Any strange lights or anything occurring like that around your room or anything, any weird dreams?
I thought it was electrical, so we went, I had my neighbor come back, and we checked the plugs, and we changed them, the receptacles. And after we did that, I thought, okay, it's safe to go back in the bedroom. We changed them, and I went back the one night, and I felt, I was feeling this too, this tingling start from your feet, go up to your legs and your thighs. I could feel this tingling, this sensation. I don't know what it was. So that night when I went back into the bedroom, I felt it. And I had, since we were working on the receptacles, I went and got one of those meters that finds the currents, live currents through the walls, you know, it beeps. And I had picked that up, and I decided to go ahead and test it. What is this feeling I'm feeling on my legs, you know, through my legs? And I put it in front of my right foot, and there was nothing there. And then I slowly put it, I mean, I put it on my right foot, and it just went off like a hot receptacle. And then I put it on my left foot, it went off like a hot receptacle. And I literally said out loud, you got to be kidding me. And then I put it off to the right of the bed, and I didn't get any or beeps. And then right as soon as I went in front of my foot, it went off like a receptacle again, and all the way across. So then I did it over the bed in the air, and from the right side started with nothing, and then I found the spot. There was a spot about 3 feet tall, and you could actually outline where this going, where this, I don't know what you would call it, energy was at, and I couldn't believe it.
And it would extend to the floor?
Yes, it was about 3 feet. And I could go from, like, the top to bottom, and then from, you know, from side to side. So I called my neighbor and said, I'm coming over there. And she said, okay. And I got my stuff together, and I thought, I'll go back and check it again. And I did. I went back, and it was gone.
Huh. Any sort of missing... I'm sorry, any sort of missing time or any sort of dream-related incidents?
No.
Or relating to the incident? I'm sorry.
Now, each time it happened, how long were you recording the phenomena? How long were you experiencing it?
I mean, how long have I been experiencing all this?
No, for instance, for each episode, how long does it usually last span a specific period of time? In other words, when you experience, is it for 10 minutes, an hour?
Well, you remember, I was getting out of here, so you're talking about this energy that was there at the end of the bed? Or
yes. Was it permanently there, or would it come in intervals, is what I'm asking. I'm sorry about that. In other words, was it there all the time, or was it there at intervals? Sometimes
no,
it was... Okay.
Intervals.
Was there a similarity or was there a correlation to the intervals? In other words, that it happened at a certain time, a certain day, or under certain weather conditions, or one thing or another?
No, any time, any day. Hmm. Whatever it felt like it.
Now, were you able to summons it by a certain, by doing something?
In other words,
were you doing something, then let's say you're washing dishes and all of a sudden it would show up. Or if you went to bed, it would show up. Or more so than, in other words, were you doing something and then it would appear more so than ever?
Usually when I was on the computer or laying on the couch or back in the bedroom, that's when it would. I mean, after a while, I would feel like a pressure on my back, pulling up my shirt, flicking in my hair. And then there was one point where I heard a growl. When I was sitting on the computer, I heard a growl, and I thought, oh, that's probably my stomach. And I just ignored it. And then I heard it, and it was a long growl, and I said, that's it, I'm out of here. And I went back down to my neighbor's house, thank God for my neighbors.
So you got like a negative impression from this then? It wasn't positive at all?
This was, you felt threatening?
Yeah.
There's, you know, it was threatening you is what you felt.
When it did the growl, yeah, a little bit, but it just deprived me of my sleep. That's mainly what I was, it's just strange. I never experienced anything like this before. I can't even explain to you how I feel, because you think you're going crazy when you experiences.
Right. Now, what? So, you, other than that, what have you felt, or what have you seen? Have you seen anything?
No.
Okay. And you felt mainly those. Now, Michael was saying that you're starting to hear noises too. Other noises?
Yeah, I noticed a lot of this popping noise that came mainly from the back by the TV back in the corner. Yeah, it was a popping noise. I, you're in a place, you live there, it has its noises, but it just was a lot that I've noticed that I'm like, what is that noise? And it was loud, and it would, you'd look towards it thinking, what is that? I mean, yeah, I have heard that.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you seen any unusual illuminations either inside the house or outside in the sky and or around? Anything unusual?
No.
Okay. And this is the first time you've ever experienced anything like this?
In your entire life.
In your entire life.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Well, Annie, I wish you good luck, and I think Michael and my friend there, Roger, will give you a good hand getting this resolved. And I was wondering if you'd be so kind to let me talk to Michael again. And it's a pleasure talking to you, and hope to speak to you again.
Okay, thank you, and same here.
Hello, Sam.
Very interesting. Now,
yeah.
Again, the area has a history, correct?
Yep.
Do you have other cases in this area?
Yes. Now, I shouldn't say cases, but Ian did a impromptu survey of some of the people in the area, and they have had over the time similar things going on in their structures.
Interesting.
So, yeah, they just didn't say anything. Nobody ever said anything to anybody, and then, you know, she said, what the heck is going on? And then the people said, well, yeah, we got some stuff that's not quite right. And so, go to find out, she's not the only one.
Oh, I see.
But I have not personally talked to any of them, but that will happen in the future.
Well, great.
We take care of this.
Please keep us up on the course of this investigation. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to give you a call after your investigation is done. Probably tomorrow or Tuesday. Is that all right?
That would be fine.
And also, I'd like to have you talk to us a little bit about some of the interesting phenomena at in the Hinsdale area.
That would take volumes, Sam. I mean, we're talking. There is a whole connection, and all of the work that not only myself, but Roger and my other associate, Cassidy O'Connor, have done. We've been able to track a energy trail, which actually goes back to the Native Americans. It's called the Ishaway Trail, coming out of New York into Pennsylvania. And where this goes is it starts in Lake Ontario at Four Mile Creek and comes all the way down. And I think Roger may have mentioned an area 516 that we've been working with.
Yes.
The problem with this is all of it heads straight to the top of that mountain. We've had, just over the last 7 months, no less than 8 different cases along the trail, all the way from Niagara Falls right on down, and just unbelievable. We were able to actually know what we were dealing with because we were able to uncover a map that William Penn had made of Pennsylvania Indian trails back in 1750. And there on the trail is the Ishaway Trail coming right out of New York. And we go, oh my God.
That is weird.
Now, in the
historical
In the historical accounts, are there depictions or stories similar to what's going on today as far as the paranormal?
Yeah. Oh, there's tons of them. I could sit here for hours and hours and go through the people and the situations that they found themselves in. And matter of fact, we had one up near East Aurora, New York, which was less than 50 feet from the original Ishaway Trail. And there was two Army couples. They were in the Army, military. They had just moved from Louisiana up, and they were renting this duplex house, and they had a little daughter who was 2 years old, I guess. You should see, Sam, she paints artwork. You should see. She has stuff when she was 8 months old painting. You should see the painting that little kid did. Absolutely beyond anything. And the energy was actually, as we found it, was actually centered more or less in her bedroom and radiated out from there.
What was she drawing?
It was absolutely amazing.
What was she drawing?
She was drawing sunsets, landscapes, mostly landscapes. And it was phenomenal. I mean, you'd swear that this person had gone to art school. And she wasn't even 8 months old.
Almost like somebody was inside of her drawing, using her as a vessel.
Yes, as a conduit. Exactly. Exactly.
Now,
so we took care of that, and that worked out fine. We did the same thing that I'm going to do here today.
I hope you got some of those paintings. Maybe make reproductions.
you know, it's a possibility that we can... I know that the parents are very proud of her, and I was overwhelmed. This kid was just, she was a little blonde, and I'll tell you what, she was an incredible person. When you meet her, you know that you're meeting something special, because this kid is just unbelievable. I was floored.
Now
I've seen a lot of...
You said something all the way up to Niagara Falls, and I had last year, starting last year, a series of people contacting me pertaining to UFO activity above the falls. And some very interesting photographs. Now, is that rather common along the trail?
Well, yeah, it is. Matter of fact, at 516, it's a constant thing. Roger even has some interesting pictures of some UFOs when we were there. We were able to capture those. Just some amazing pictures.
And
the black helicopters have showed up, and so, you know, they're getting all of it. Bigfoot, some incredible pictures of tracks in fresh snow. And you just can't imagine, over a 60-foot area, 5 footprints. Do you know what the gate on that has to be? 12 to 15 feet between prints.
Wow.
Just unbelievable.
Just amazing
pictures. They're incredible. I mean, best pictures I've ever seen of evidence that there is. I've never seen anything like it. But, you know, it's just crazy stuff.
Yeah. But for you, it's commonplace, isn't it?
Well, you know, when you do this work, you take yourself out of what you normally are as a person. And I do only the work for the people that are involved, and that's my whole thing. I do the work for the people. I don't usually charge anything. Sometimes somebody will give me something, but, you know, it's expensive. The gas and running everywhere and the time and all of the work that goes into doing a case. It's not like what you see on TV. I mean, to do a case right, like this one, you've got to do the background work. You've got to know what the land was used for. If you can find out the people that once lived there, that is a great help. Because I hate to go to a place not knowing anything and walking into something. I want to know as much about a case before I get there as I possibly can, so I have very few surprises.
Well, you're going to be a regular in our investigations, our man in the field, you and Roger. In this case, hopefully you'll be keeping us up to date on this and other cases that you're working on. Now, for people that would like to know some of the past information and other information on things that you may have posted on the Internet, is there an Internet site that they can go to?
I'll tell you what. If they go to Google and they just put in my name, Michael Rambacher, and that's Rambacher, there are probably close to 400 or 500 sites there.
Great.
They can pick and choose whatever they want to look at.
Fantastic. Michael, we're going to be in touch on this, and I wish you luck on this case, and we'll be talking to you real soon.
Right. We're going to help Annie out today, and hopefully we'll take care of this.
Great. Thank you very much. Mike Rambacher and Roger Marsh, everybody. We'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds Into Other Realms.
TheEdgeOnAir.com and Thresholds Into Other Realms present Thresholds Radio, a weekly show dedicated to all things paranormal. Join your hosts Sam Maranto, John Stevenson, and Anthony Kopp Fridays from 10 to 11 p.m. for an expedition beyond your most unexplainable dreams. With new guests every week, Thresholds Radio will bend your views on reality. That's Friday nights 10 to 11 on TheEdgeOnAir.com. For more info on Thresholds Radio, visit UFO-info.com.
You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds Into Other Realms on TheEdgeOnAir.com and UFO-info.com. We'd like to thank everybody for listening today. Next week, we're going to go back to our regular format. It's just the last 2 weeks. We wanted to do something kind of special for our audience. You know, we've been on for about 15 or 16 weeks now, and last week we did the Mega Show. And this week we did the Witness Account Show. So we wanted to do sort of a celebration, you know, for our 15th or 16th show. And but, you know, we're going to go back to a regular format next week, and we're going to have some great guests. So tune in Sunday at 7:30 on UFO-info.com, and you can listen to our three-hour show. Or if you can't wait that long and, you know, you just miss us, you can tune in Friday night on TheEdgeOnAir.com or go to our website. There's a link for it. And you can listen to our one-hour show at 10 o'clock on Fridays. So it's kind of like what you heard today, a lot of witness accounts, things like that. You know, just a little bit more edgier than our three-hour shows. So, thank you for listening. We hope everybody has a great night. Drive safe. You can listen to Beyond Thresholds.